ഹരയോം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യം പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ടഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻധാമിക്ക് മായപൂർധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരിധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരിധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരിധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Mishabadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhudale Shri Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namini. Namaste Sarasudevam Gauravani Prajarine Narvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Deshadarine. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാത് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പദയോസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാ ഇതരതസ് അർത്ഥേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൽ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത് സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വരൈ സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യദേത്രകൃതിവി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭിത്തക്ഷണാ നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഗമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവസംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസം ആലയം മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയവിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം ഹനുവേദമവേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമജ്ജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മൈതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിഥിദീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ജൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോഃ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാ മുരാരേ മധുരീം ന കനികാഭി കാഭി കാഭി നമാ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമിതി സുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണം ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം ഭംഗം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽ കൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, on last Sunday, we looked at these three verses, that is verse number 21, 22 and 23, isn't it? Sukham atyantiyam yattad, buddhigrahyam atindriyam, veti yatrana chayuvayam sthidas chalati tattvada, yam labdhva chabaram labham, manyate nathigam tata, യസ്മിന് സ്ഥിതോ ന ദുഃഖേന ഗുരുനാപി വിചാല്യത തം വിദ്യ ദുഃഖസംയോഗം വിയോഗം യോഗസംഹിതം ആൻഡ് സ നിശ്ചയേന യോക്തവ്യോ യോഗോ നിർവിണ ചേതസാഹ ദീസ് ആർ ത്രീ വേഴ്സസ് ലുക്കിംഗ് സോ കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ഹിയർ സുഖം ആത്യന്തികം യത് തദ് കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ദി സുഖം ദി എക്സ്പീരിയൻസ് ഓഫ് ദ സോൾ in the time while engaging in meditation process, Krishna says here, that sukham, Krishna calls it as atyandiyam. Sukham atyandiyam yathad. There is a difference between the sukham, what we experience through the mind or through the intelligence. That is why Krishna is very specific about it here. Sukham atyandiyam yathad. Atyandiyam yathad. Buddhigrahyam atindriyam. Krishna says here, for example, when we discussed about this example of the frog in the well and the frog in the sea, isn't it? When the frog in the well was shown the sea, the frog in the well could not imagine the size of the sea. It was so big. And it is similar situation for us also. When the conditioned soul, after self-realization, when he experiences that happiness is unlimited. It is just like the frog in the well seeing the sea, which he could not imagine before, and seeing the vastness of the ocean and the amount of water there, how the frog was completely taken away by the size of the sea, and what experiences and what thoughts it has gone through, the frog's thoughts, whatever that was. In a similar way, when we come out of this bodily identity, from the bodily concept of life to spiritual self-realization, Krishna is saying it's exactly like that. When the frog realizes the size of the ocean, how much it gets completely mesmerized by the whole thing. Similarly, when we also come out of the body, or the identity of body, mind and intelligence, and come to self-realization, immediately the same experience happens. Sukham atyandigam yathad, Krishna says here, said that aprameyam. Aprameyam means that something you cannot measure. Mind has got a quantity to measure everything, isn't it? Mind measures. Always it measures. As soon as you see a person, you measure up something about that person. Anything. The mind, nature of the mind is to measure. But aprameyam, one that cannot be measured, that is a kind of happiness in this. Sukham atyandigam yathad. Brahmagrahyam atindriyam. Because any happiness, what you are experiencing through the mind, is in Shastram called parichinam. Parichinam means it's limited. It is limited. Plus, it's broken. It's broken. You cannot have continuous happiness in the mind on any object. You will experience some happiness, some other thought waves will come and it will interrupt. Your thought waves will completely interrupt. And then, afterwards, you may experience some distress, maybe the happiness may come back again. But continuous experience is not possible. That is the problem with the mind. Mind cannot experience continuously anything. Not only the mind cannot experience, even when you go into Dhyana Yogam process, even if you have a form of Krishna or Vishnu or any other form which you are meditating upon, that form will not stay permanently inside. It's not possible to meditate. Because why? The super soul inside will push that form away after a while. This is the experience of all the yogis, jnanis and persons who have gone into meditation in a deeper level. The reason for that is the super soul will not tolerate any form to remain inside continuously for a long period of time. It will take it away. So even while if you are very good at, who says this? Kapila Maharshi says this. In the Kapilam you can read this. In the Kapila Maharshi's instructions to Devahuti Devi, he will say, mention this. Eventually that form also will disappear. You are meditating on a form with a lot of effort and you have come to some form is staying in your mind, but it will only stay for some time. Maybe it will stay for a little longer time, but eventually that form will disappear. Form cannot stay inside. This is the nature of this our structure, the body. The mind is like that. And mind is also like that because we have brought this form into meditation and later on, even that form cannot stay because the super soul will take it away from inside. You can experience this yourself. Anything in this world, with the mind you have tried very hard and you have managed to keep a form inside, it will be taken away eventually. That is why we all have the difficulty. And when we chant the holy name, we try to remember the form, it won't stay. It's not possible because the super soul inside is so powerful, he keeps it away from inside. He pushes it out from inside. So all the happiness that we have experienced through the mind, the other difficulty is that sometimes with the happiness comes distress also after a while. Many things in this material world, when we try to enjoy that, it is generally followed by distress as well, in some form of the distress as well. So that is viparitam, opposite experience that is happens. Or it can be in the form of depression. So, but atyandiya sukham, Krishna is saying here, sukham atyandiyam yatat. What is this atyandiyam? Atyandiyam means uninterrupted. The uninterrupted, continuous, that is what this self-realization means. Because otherwise it's not worthwhile if you're going to lose it again, isn't it? After putting all this effort, and then at the end, if it's not going to stay, it's going to go, then it's not worthwhile. That's why Krishna is stressing there, sukham atyandiyam yatat. That sukham is atyandiyam. It will never leave. It has to stay permanently. And the other important thing is, what Krishna is saying here is, to experience that, you don't need the mind. You don't need the mind. Mind is unnecessary. That's why mental happiness experienced through the mind and happiness experienced from the self is too different, completely different. Experience through the mind, it is interrupted, all the time interrupted. Sometimes followed by distress as well. That is the nature of the happiness through mind. Happiness from the self is uninterrupted and never followed by distress afterwards. Constant happiness. That is why all the great yogis, jnanis, great devotees, they have come to spiritual life for this. Knowing very well that there is something permanent happiness in this world. There is something one has to inquire after. So, to establish that, Krishna mentions here, sukham atyandiyam yat tad. That sukham is atyandiyam, Krishna says. And then he says here, buddhigrahyam atindriyam. Adindriyam, it is beyond the senses, beyond the mind and beyond the intelligence also. Buddhigrahyam atindriyam. With the senses you cannot experience that. Through the senses and the mind you can't experience that. Nor by the intelligence. That's why it is specifically mentioned buddhigrahyam atindriyam. It is not for buddhi. You may study shastram with your intelligence, with buddhi. But experience when it comes, buddhi has to pull back. Buddhi has to stay away. Buddhi has no role anymore after that. We'll come to that. How does that work? How does the buddhi and the soul interact with each other? That's more interesting. We think that we have so much used to with mind and intelligence working in this world, isn't it? Everything we look through the mind and try to understand through the mind. And our attachment, aversion, all these things happen from through the mind. And also kartrutva, bhoktrutva, all this happens through the mind. With intelligence, we weigh up things and make decisions with the help of intelligence, isn't it? Nishchayalpiya mana, sangalpa vigalpam. Sorry, nishchayalpiya buddhi, sangalpa vigalpam mana. Sangalpam vigalpam, that's the job of the mind. And making decisions, nishchayalpiya buddhi. Buddhi makes the decision. He picks one from the various options and goes by that. That is the job of the intelligence. So he says here, Krishna says here, said, not buddhigrahyam atindriyam, not in the way that buddhi can capture it. Buddhi cannot capture it. Not the way we think about it, how the buddhi captures it. We think everything can be captured with buddhi. Krishna says buddhigrahyam but atindriyam. It can be captured by buddhi, but not the way we think about buddhi. We think about buddhi because we say somebody is very intelligent. And that intelligence means that he can understand things, he can grasp things. But this is not a thing which has to grasp something. It is something that comes and purifies the intelligence. It's the other way it works. The soul is never under the control of mind or intelligence. You can never apply mind and intelligence to understand the soul. On the other hand, when the soul reveals itself to us, when the self-realization happens, it purifies our intelligence in such a way that it becomes buddhigrahyam. Buddhi comes under the control of the soul at that point. That's what Krishna is saying there. Buddhigrahyam adindriyam. What happens is, try to understand this, in the deep sleep state, what does happen? We experience happiness, isn't it? In the deep sleep state, we are experiencing happiness. There is no doubt about that. There is no mind, there is no intelligence, there is no senses, there is no body. None of them are present there at the time, at that state. And in spite of that, there is happiness. There is happiness still experienced. But that happiness, what we are experiencing in the night, when we wake up in the morning, we say we had a good sleep or we had a great time in that deep sleep state. So at that time, the intelligence is not active, isn't it? Intelligence is not alert. Intelligence is not making any decision. Intelligence is not involved in any kind of activity. At the time when we are in deep sleep state, intelligence is not active. So, therefore, because it was like that, when we were experiencing through that deep sleep, we didn't experience it through intelligence. You see, this is a little subtle thing to understand. In the deep sleep state, we are keeping the intelligence away. Intelligence also is not active at that time. So, because of that, intelligence active means alertness, isn't it? Intelligence means alertness. You are alert about some things. That is, the alertness is the symptom of that intelligence. So, because intelligence is not alert at that time, when we are experiencing that deep sleep, it was not experienced through intelligence. It was not experienced through intelligence. But in the time of meditation, dhyanam state, Krishna says here, or samadhi state, because we are doing it deliberately, by controlling the mind, deliberately we are doing it with full knowledge of the mind and the intelligence. Krishna says here, at that time when you experience that, it is atyandikam. It is uninterrupted. You have to think about this again. In the deep sleep state, because of the deep sleep's intelligence is not making any decisions, is not active, the experience of that deep sleep, of that pleasure, of that happiness what we experienced at that time, is not experienced through the intelligence, because intelligence is kept away. But in the meditation stage, dhyanam stage or samadhi state, it is not exactly the same as in the deep sleep. There the intelligence is there, mind is absorbed form, what we are in dhyanam, whatever you are meditating upon. And therefore, the presence of the intelligence is like that it is getting, the effect of the soul gets reflected on the intelligence. Effects of the soul gets reflected on the intelligence. And because the buddhi is in an alert state, therefore the soul will reflect very well at that time inside, in the samadhi state. This is the experience of the realized souls. That's their explanation to that. That is their explanation to that. You have to accept it that way. Unless you experience all these things, you can't logicize these things. What they're saying to us, what they have experienced it. You have to accept it that way. That they are comparing sushupti state with the self-realized state. In the sushupti state, because buddhi was not active, it was not alert, jagrata was not there, it was not alert, therefore, the effect of happiness of that deep sleep is not known to us at that time. When do you know that? When you wake up. When the buddhi comes back, you come to know about it. But what the Krishna is saying here is that when you are in the realized state, when you are in the samadhi state, because the buddhi has not gone to sleep at that time, buddhi is still present, the whole soul starts reflecting through the buddhi. Soul starts reflecting through the buddhi, and experience of the soul will be experienced through the intelligence. This is there in the Bhagavad Gita. Only thing you have to go through those verses. In one later on, in the 7th chapter, Krishna will say there that Buddhar Buddhimadam Asmi. Do you remember that verse? There is an important verse there. Buddhar Buddhimadam Asmi Tejas Tejasinamaham Balam Balavadam Jaham Kamaraga Vivarjidam Dharma Aviruddha Bodeshu Kamosmi Bharadarshabha. Krishna says, so these verses are in the 7th chapter. What is indicating is this Buddhar Buddhimadam Asmi. That is what it means. We understand, we will never understand otherwise that verse. If you keep thinking about that verse, what is Buddhar Buddhimadam Asmi means? Buddhar Buddhimadam Asmi means this, that when we are in the samadhi state, in the self-realized state, Krishna is saying that the power of the soul will reflecting through the intelligence, will show its power in such a way that buddhi is me, Krishna says. Why? It has come from Krishna. So naturally it has to be Krishna, isn't it? So everything in the Bhagavad Gita, when you are looking at each verse, you have to keep looking at it from the platform of the soul. If you start looking at it from the bodily level, it will never be understood. It will never be understood. Otherwise, Krishna is saying to us, Buddhir Buddhimadam Asmi. What do we think? We'll think, my intelligence is Krishna? How does that connect? These thoughts will come. What Krishna is saying here is that the reflection of the soul through the intelligence, which does not happen during the deep sleep state, comes through forcefully through the intelligence at the time of self-realization. This is the important thing. When self-realization happens, the nature of our intelligence changes. Till then, the intelligence has been working, making decisions of its own. Nishchayalmiya buddhi. Nishchayalmiya, making decisions, determines. But as soon as it comes to this state of self-realization, Krishna is saying here, the intelligence at that time, the soul will reflect through the intelligence so forcefully, very clearly, the intelligence will experience that the blissful nature of the soul. That is what it is mentioned here, Buddhir Grahyam means. See that word? Buddhir Grahyam in that verse. Buddhir Grahyam Atindriyam, beyond the senses, but captured by the buddhi. Captured by the buddhi. Beyond senses, but captured by the buddhi. So, this is how it is explained here. So, at that time, what Krishna is saying here is that when it reflects through the intelligence, in other words, the buddhi at that time is very sushma. Sushma means very subtle and very alert as well. Extremely alert, jagrada ryuvam, tasmal jagrada jagrada, always jagrada, full of realization and fully conscious of who I am at that time happens. When you realize who I am, then all this dullness and depression and disgusted nature of the life will go. Till self-realization, when self-realization happens. And this is how it happens, because the soul, when it starts coming through, reflecting through the intelligence, immediately intelligence becomes so alert. Now the intelligence is not, intelligence is alert about all the nonsense in this world at the moment. Things which are not of importance to us. We are alert about all that. It's not alert about the thing what it should be alert about, that is our own identity, who we are. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very, very interesting to note that as soon as first time the lotus flower came from Krishna's navel and Brahma came there, isn't it? You know that situation in the Bhagavatam. And when Brahma saw water everywhere, and if you look into Bhagavatam, the second canto, the first question Brahma asked was, he didn't see where is all this water coming from, or where the other planets are. He says, who am I sitting here? Kaya Esha, who am I? Who am I, the person who is sitting here? And that is the worst thing for us. We never ask that question what Brahma has asked. Brahma alone asked this question, who am I sitting here in this lotus? Who am I? I don't understand who I am. That is the first question Brahma asked. What do we ask? Where is the moon? Where is the Mars? Where is the Saturn? How far is it from here? How do we go there? And how much water? What is underneath the water? What is in the space? This is all these questions we will ask. We will never ask this question, who I am asking this question. That question will never come. Because as far as I am concerned, I am here permanently. So there is nothing question to be asked. So see that difference in the way questions were asked. There itself we have far away from Brahma's question. Brahma's first question was, who am I looking at all these places? Who am I, this person inside? So self-realization is all this. That to ask this question, who am I? That question has never come to our mind, or that shows that the intelligence is not very high, isn't it? Our intelligence is like that. That it will ask all the other rubbish, but it will never ask the question it should ask. Who am I sitting here? Who am I running around in this world? For what? That question is never asked. In the Bhagavatam, you can see that when you read the second canto. So here also Krishna is saying, buddhigrahyam adindriyam. So the buddhi or intelligence, which has its own limitations, like the mind has, buddhi has its own limitations, isn't it? And that is called parichinam. Parichinam means it is interrupted. It is broken down. That means capacity is limited. Buddhi will lose that thing, that interrupted state of parichinavastha, that broken state of intelligence. Now, if we have some issue, we apply your intelligence to it, it will work for some time, then intelligence will withdraw from there, isn't it? Intelligence cannot take it further. Many issues we can't solve by intelligence. For example, a mathematical equation or things like that, you can find some solution with intelligence. But there are issues in this world which you cannot simply by intelligence, you can't solve that problem. You don't know what the answer is because it has got so many options. And intelligence cannot comprehend that. Intelligence cannot accommodate that, isn't it? Many issues like that. Then you take a chance. Intelligence don't know what to do. Mind also doesn't know what to do. Then what do? Then you have to take a chance. So similarly, Krishna says here that when the reflection of the soul happens through the intelligence, or when the intelligence is completely under the control of the soul, when the soul starts reflecting powerfully through the intelligence, this nature of the intelligence of unable to comprehend everything loses that, and it becomes very powerful. Intelligence becomes very powerful, capable, able to absorb things properly. That is called the buddhi proper. That's what Krishna says, buddhir buddhi madham asmi. I am buddhi of in the next verses he says here that buddhir buddhi madham asmi tejas tejas naam. In the seventh chapter, this is the next chapter, if you look into the verse 10 and 11, you will see there in the Bhagavad Gita two verses, buddhir balam balavadam jaham kam raga vivarjitam dharma aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. It is 10, isn't it? In the verses, yeah. 10. Bijam mam sarvabhudanam vidhi partha sanatanam buddhir buddhi madam asmi tejas tejasinam aham balam balavadam chaham kamaraga vivarjidam dharma aviruddha bodeshu kamosmi bharadarshabha. Two verses. What does it mean? It means this. That intelligence after self-realization, Krishna is saying there, that intelligence, it's me then. It's me through that intelligence who is operating. Intelligence, it is me. Why? Because the soul has taken over at that time. So that becomes Krishna's opulence at that time. It is Krishna's opulence. Our buddhi becomes Krishna's opulence then. It has become Krishna's opulence then. So, and what happens to that buddhi is, jnanis, great jnanis who are realized souls, that that buddhi, what they have manifested in that form, through that buddhi is where all the siddhis happens to them. Many, many siddhis, what they experience in their advancement in spiritual path, what they experience, all that siddhis happens through that buddhi. You see? So you know that many, many yogis and jnanis, when they are in the process of self-realization, at different stages, different kinds of Aishwarya Siddhis, mystic powers manifest in them. And that mystic powers is activated by the intelligence at that time, because by then the process of self-realization started happening through them. So, what happens to the brain? What happens to that? It is not the brain what we are talking about now. We should not misunderstand that the brain will all be replaced by something new material there. No, the brain remains the same. Actually, we misunderstand that we are so much addicted with the brain, isn't it? Everything is brain for us. And so, the brain what is spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita is a different thing than the brain what we talk about, what we have studied at the school and colleges and all that. That brain is a different brain. But this brain, what Krishna is saying here is that the functioning of the body, the mind, intelligence, everything, which is being affected by the presence of the soul inside, and with self-realization, how our power of intelligence, because there is no other equivalent word for this. Prajna is a word in the Shastram. Buddhi is another word. But when it comes to gets translated, it gets difficult to put it different way. So, buddhi, what Shastra buddhi, or buddhi through the Shastram, what is referred to here, is that thing that even subtle things you'll be able to understand at that time. Sushmam. Sushmada will increase. Prajna Shuddhi means that. When the prajna inside, or the intelligence inside, when it gets that reflection of the soul in the intelligence, and intelligence become purer. Purer means prajna Shuddhi. When prajna Shuddhi happens, very, very subtle things one will be able to understand. Otherwise, we won't understand subtle things. We are very gross people, otherwise, aren't we? Subtle things are very subtle for us. It remains subtle forever. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a very subtle subject. Everything is very subtle subject. So, you will notice there, we talked about it yesterday also. In the chapter 11, in Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna spoke about the importance of Salsangam. What does Salsangam help? Salsangam helps to improve this prajna. That's what Salsangam does. With more discussion about the soul, attributes of the soul, what happens is the effect on our own intelligence and realization slowly starts developing. That will happen gradually. That's what Krishna says here, that it becomes powerful enough, this intelligence become powerful enough, and extremely subtle things it will be able to experience through that intelligence. It will be able to experience through that intelligence. And very powerful, and it becomes at that time, it is Krishna's vibhuti, Krishna's opulence it is. It's not anymore an individual's false ego operating through the intelligence. It's two different states. Normally our intelligence is connected with our false ego, isn't it? False ego means jiva ahanda, a jiva's false ego. And that false ego makes him to think, even while using the intelligence, it is the jiva ahanda that's operating through that intelligence. But when this realization comes, when Krishna is saying here, that what he mentions in this verse, sukham atyandigam yadat buddhigrahyam atindriyam. Atindriyam, straight away Krishna mentions that it is nothing to do with the senses, nor with the false ego, none of them. It is buddhigrahyam atindriyam. It comes from another source, which is the soul. When there is no self-realization, all our activities are centered around the false ego. Jivahanda, jiva's false ego. False ego interacts with the intelligence, false ego interacts with the mind, false ego interacts with the all our activities as well. So, that's why Krishna says here, that buddhir, so it turns into Krishna's vibhuti, and that is why it says here, buddhir buddhimadam asmi, tejas tejas sinamaham, balam balavadam chaham, kamaraga vivarjidam, dharma aviruddha bodeshu, kamosmi bhradarshava. We never understand these verses unless it is understood this way. Kamaraga vivarjidam, dharma aviruddha bodeshu, kamosmi bhradarshava. Krishna is saying there, how to put it, dharma aviruddha bhudeshu, that which is not against religious principles, that dharmam, even if it is sense gratification, that kamam, I am that, Krishna says. Isn't it? How do we understand that verse? Dharma aviruddha bhudeshu kamam asmi. Krishna is saying there, that dharmam, which is not against, that dharmam aviruddha bhudeshu, that in living entities, when you have this dharmam, which is not against religious principles, Krishna is saying, I am that. Kamosmi, Paradarshava. Isn't it? In that verse, Balam Balavadam Chaham, Kamaraga Vivarjidam, Dharma Aviruddha Bhudeshu, Kamosmi, Paradarshava. Krishna is saying there. What is Krishna is saying is that when self-realization happens, only when self-realization happens, at that time, even sense gratification may happen, but at that time it is not against the religious principles. Dharma aviruddha bodhesho. That is me, Krishna says. We misunderstand in a different way. Earlier in the beginning, when I also read the Bhagavad Gita, I also thought in the other way. I was thinking that if you are following all the four regulative principles, then it's not against the law, so everything what I should do should be okay. But that's not so. Many people have that misunderstanding. I was also having the same misunderstanding in the beginning. It took a long time to understand this. What does all this mean? Dharma aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi varadarshava. That means, as long as I'm not breaking the regulative principles, everything else is fine, whatever I do, enjoy my senses. Because I'm not breaking the following regulative principles, so I should be okay. This is how you think about it, isn't it? Many people think like that still. That I'm not, because the only four law we know is this four, nothing else. So keeping this four in the forefront, we live in this world. We think everything is covered in this four, isn't it? Because Bhagavatam is only saying those four things in the beginning, four regulative principles. So we're thinking that if you're following these four regulative principles, then whatever little things like watching television or going for a film or watching a football match, because it's not again mentioned there in the Bhagavatam, so it should be okay. That's how many people will think. That's why we make concessions to ourselves. We start giving concessions. But if you understand these words, dharma aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi, Krishna is saying, when realization happens, self is realized, the self, which is Krishna's presence in us, will start reflecting through the intelligence, and anything that happens after that is not against religious principles. It's not against religious. Up to that point, everything is against religious principles. Whether you watch the movie or football match or go watch the television, no matter what you do. Everything is against. It's not self-realization. That is considered to be not helpful for spiritual advancement. This is the subtle side of it. That we will always look at the... This is why when we read Bhagavad Gita and start thinking everything purely based on the... based on what mentions there... And if we do not see the subtle aspect of it, we get completely carried away by that. Get carried away. It takes a long time then to understand that there is another side to it in this way. That so here, Krishna says here that with that vibhuti, that power of Krishna's opulences, we start realizing what we are. At the same time it is happening. And that is not to be experienced by the senses. It's not to be experienced by the senses. And it cannot be experienced by the senses. Krishna is saying, buddhigrahyam atindriyam. Atindriyam means you don't need senses for that, to experience that. So, by then, all the senses have come under control. Complete control. And this happiness that's coming from the soul is experienced by the intelligence which has been purified now. By the presence of the soul there. The presence of soul, and we start experiencing that self-realization through that intelligence. Please be always cautious about this. The intelligence, what we apply in this world for all our material life, is different than this intelligence, what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The intelligence in the Bhagavad Gita is referring to that prajna shakti, which is intelligence that is purified by the presence of the realization of the soul, when that intelligence purified, prajna shakti, it's called, prajna increases. The word used is prajna. Prajna, the power of the prajna increases, and with that, the soul directly is acting through the intelligence, and at that time, it will understand what is self-realization means. Self-realization means. What happened, Krishna says here, when that happens, buddhigrahyam adindriyam veti. Look at those verses. Veti yatra naichaivayam stita chaladi tatvada. Stita chaladi tatvada. He gets established in that truth. Stita. Stita means fully established in that position. Stita chaladi tatvada. Stirada. So, stita chaladi tatvada. So, after the samadhi state has come to him during meditation process, because we are talking about meditation now, dhyana yoga, which will come to that in the Ekadasha Skandham later. Even when you are experiencing that samadhi state in the meditation, because by then you have gone very high in our spiritual life, you have come to the stage of meditation, dhyanam. And through dhyanam comes the yogi's experience, what is called samadhi, isn't it? Yamam, neyamam, asanam, pranayamam, pratyaharam, dharana, dhyanam, samadhi. So dhyanam is the stage just before samadhi. So once you have come to that dhyanam state, you are very close to samadhi state, isn't it? You have gone through all the other 7 steps or whatever. How many steps? 8, total 8, isn't it? So 8 is samadhi, 7th is the dhyanam. 7th is the dhyanam. So by now the 6th has gone through. You come to the dhyanam 7th stage. That means you are just next to the samadhi state. So Krishna says here that once he has experienced that samadhi state, even if his prarabdham is still there, it hasn't left him because the body is there still. Even if that prarabdham pulls him down, even if that prarabdham, even if the prarabdham pulls him down, even if that prarabdham pulls him down, but still that happiness what he has experienced for a short period of time, it doesn't leave him. It doesn't leave him. This is Krishna's mercy to us. Because if you haven't got that taste for it, we will not pursue it further. So therefore Krishna leaves a little bit of that in us as a memory for that, what you have experienced in the dhyanam state. In the dhyanam state. And this salsangam, that happiness will never leave him. Leave him in the sense that it will not completely leave him. A trace of that will still remain in that person. If he has experienced that. A trace of that happiness will stay in him. The purpose of salsangam is for that. Is for that. At some time, some point in time, in a very auspicious moment, what will, even for a short period of time, even for a few seconds, if we experience the presence of the soul inside and we start seeing that presence of them, the salsangam is only creating an opportunity for that. It's only an opportunity for that. If we keep on discussing about Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is impossible to realize the soul statement is, it is impossible that at some point in time it has to have its effect on the person who is listening. Because when that will happen, that's very difficult to say. That's very difficult to say. But before proper Shravanam happens, there is a long way to go before that happens. Like Krishna mentions there, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see, Yadha yadalpa parimrajyadesau mal punya gadha shravanabhidhane. Punya gadha. First thing Krishna says, you have to hear about me. Punya gadha. Punya gadha means katha. Katha. Krishna's story, about Krishna's pastimes, appearance, everything. One has to hear that. Mal punya gadha shravanabhidhani. After that, what will happen is tadha tadha pashyadi. After that, suddenly it will happen. What? Vastu sushmam. That sushma vastu inside the soul, realization will suddenly happen. But before that, one has to go through the through the process of hearing the about Krishna Katha. So this is only an opportunity for that. So exactly Krishna says, just like when we get a glimpse of the sun, when the clouds move away, in the similar way, from inside, when that cover goes away, and we will suddenly realize the presence of the vastu inside, Krishna's presence inside. And that's what Krishna says here, na chalati tatvaha, tatvaha, na chalati tatvaha. And that will never leave him permanently. Even a very little realization he may get for a very short period of time of the presence of the soul, that will never leave him at all. So by Krishna's mercy, somehow or the other, if it happens any time in life, Krishna says, we don't have to worry further, because what will happen is, if that experience you had it in life once, at the time of death, it will come back again. At the time of death, it will come back again. We will never lose that, provided we have experienced that in lifetime, at some point in time. So, if once it has shined inside the presence of the soul, all our other vasanas which are inside, it will completely destroy them. Presence of the soul inside. So that's why Krishna says that na chalati tatvaha. He says here, sukham veti yatra na chaivayam sthidas chalati tatvada. Na, he will sthidalati chatvada. That he will never again, even if he goes back, loses that after a while, the vasanas will get eventually destroyed. Then he will not, from the tattvam, never again loses that. Once for all, he will not lose the whole thing forever. It will, that little experience what one had, or little effect of realization, that will stay inside and will come back at the time of death. And exactly the same thing Krishna mentioned in the second chapter also, of the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? If you look at the Yasham Brahmistidhi Pada, this is called Brahmistidhi. That Brahmistidhi, if he attains once even in life before death, Krishna says that will come back at the time of death and save him from the changing the body again, moving into another body. And temporarily you may move again, you will lose it, but completely it won't go. Completely it won't go. Temporarily it will go. That's why it is mentioned there, Jadabharata has to take the birth of a deer again. And if you remember, in the deer's body he remembered who he was. In the Bhagavatam it says like that. Deer, in the form of deer, Jadabharata remembered who he was. Imagine that. How that Purvajanma Smarana, it's called, who I was before. Why did that happen? Because in the Jadabharata, in the Bharatarajesh Yogeshwara's form, he had a little glimpse of this. And that followed him in his next life, even though due to Prarabdham, he had to accept a deer's body. Even in that deer's body, it followed him. Because that of the little flicker experience he had of self-realization in the king's body. In the king's body. So, he did not lose that in the deer's body either. And when he came to the next body of a brahmana, if you remember, he had the third birth as a brahmana, this followed him again. This followed him again. So, for three lifetimes, what he experienced in the first lifetime, in the animal's body it followed him. Again in the form of the Brahmana's body, where he was, Jadabharata he was called, isn't it? It was like a Jadam. Jadam means like a dead wood he was. He was not responding to this world. Why? Because this realization has come back again and started working inside. So he could not, even if he wanted to, he could not adjust with this world. He could not adjust with this world. So powerful is this self-realization. We think it is something we just change the clothes like thing, isn't it? It's not. It is a complete overhaul of the whole thing. Misconception about the body, misconception about the mind, intelligence, the false ego completely vanishes, disappears, and all attachment with the world is over, and we are situated in our pure identity as the soul. And how does it say? In the Bhagavatam it says, Nijaramanaruna charanaravindana dhyanena Parichita Bhakti Yogena. About Jadabharata it says like this. Nijaramana Aruna Charanaravinda Anudhyanena Parichita Bhakti Yogena. Then he says here that he was so absorbed in that happiness of that soul that he was completely absorbed in that, and that experience he had in the Bharata's life, in Bharata, when he was the king, emperor Bharata, that realization that went through that, from that body into the deer's body, from the deer's body again to the brahmana's body. And that is what has saved him. That is what has saved him. So, because what happens is, if the prarabdham is too strong, you see, Bharata Maharaj's case, what has happened, we know very well, isn't it? What happened to him was, this episode of Bharata Maharshi's stage in life in the Bhagavadam is important, because in the fifth canto, what is happening is that the this King Bharata, he had to leave his body, but unfortunately, due to some mistake he committed in that body, that he had to accept the body of the deer while he was performing the while standing in the water, he was chanting Gayatri. At that time, this deer, frightened of the lion, jumped over the river. There were two streams coming, and Bharata Maharshi was sitting on one side, and while the deer has jumped, because of the fear for the lion, it delivered the baby in the water. And the baby started flowing, coming down in the water. And it came through the side where Bharata Maharaj was sitting. Bharata Maharaj, out of the goodness inside, thought, is it not my duty to protect this baby deer? Otherwise, why should it come through this side? It could have gone through the other way. All these kind of things, thoughts went through his mind. And he picked up the baby deer from there. Looking at the beauty of that baby deer, got attached to it. Got attached to it. Krishna will talk about this in attachment issue, which is a big issue in this world, isn't it? Attachment in this world. That's what he's going to talk about in the next few verses. So, what happened to deer, to our Bharata was, that he somehow or the other, with a little association, he got attached to that. That attachment developed, and he has forgotten his spiritual life completely, and victimized by the attachment. So, he says there, Nija Ramana Aruna Charanara Vindana Dhyanena Parijada Bhakti Yogena. So, when this thing happened to Jadabharata, he is not Jadabharata yet, he is still the Bharata, King Bharata, he decided to take care of this baby deer, which shows that by now the attachment has been built up with the baby deer. And then the rest of the life was looking after the deer. He's completely forgotten what purpose. He had given up all his kingdom, empire, everything, and has come to the forest to cultivate spiritual life. And that whole thing changed into looking after this deer, a baby deer. So that was the problem, what has happened. There was a prarabdham behind it, but I had to go through this. So prarabdham won't leave us. It will carry on going like this. It was meant to happen that in this life, that he had to get attached to this baby deer. So with that result of that, but because self-realization had a glimpse of that in the king's body, that followed him and protected him. So, so it says here that Krishna mentions that here, that has protected him, therefore sthirachaladi tattvaha. Sthirachaladi na tattvaha. That once you have got it, then you won't lose it. You may temporarily lose due to prarabdham, some things may happen. You see, that's what has happened to Bharata. Due to prarabdham, he had to go through another body of the deer, and he has to go through the life of Brahmana. But in two lifetimes, it was over. He has come back again. Why? Because that realization has happened in the king's body, in the emperor's body. So, that's why Krishna is saying there, once you have got it, then you have got it. You are not going to lose it again. That alone will pull you back into the source, into the soul. So that's the most important thing. That's why Krishna is saying in the next verse, Yam ladva chabaram labham manyade nathigam tada yasmin stito na dukhena guruna api vichalyade. Very important verse, because Krishna is saying, if you have a fear that, oh, I got it once, but I've lost it, will I not get it again? Krishna says, no, don't have that fear. If you have got it once, Krishna says, that's enough. It will take you back. It will pull you back again into the state of self-realization. That's why Krishna, Yam labdhva chabaram labham manyade nathigam tada yasmin stito na dukhena guruna api vichalyade. Krishna is saying there, Yam labdhva chabaram labham. If you have got it, that is the greatest profit in this life. There is no other profit. There's no other prophet, Krishna says, you can compare with that. Why? Because yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhigam tada. Because a person who has found a big treasure, he's a beggar, and he has nothing, he's so poor that he has to beg every day. Suddenly by chance, he got a huge treasure. Will he go for begging again next day? He will not go, would he? He won't go for begging again. Krishna says that will be like that. Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate na adhigam tada. After that there is no more inquiry about anything because you have got the greatest treasure. Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate na adhigam tada tasmin yasmin stito na dukhena guru na pivichalyate. Where? Yasmin stito na dukhena guru na pivichalyate. Even if some great crisis happens in this world, serious crisis, very, very serious crisis happens, Guru Napina Vichalyade, he won't be shaken by that because he knows who he is. That is the power of the realization. Why do we think that we talk about the self-realization so much? It is because of this. Yasmin stito na dukhena guru napi vichalyade. Even if that dukham, what is in this world, is of the greatest volume of dukkham, or greatest power, or greatest effect, such a great distress happens in this world, yasmin stito na dukkhena guruna api vichalyate, he will not move. He won't be shaken by that. He will not be shaken by that. Why? Because he has experienced who he is. So this whole Dhyana Yogam, Krishna is mentioning to us that the importance of self-realization, and when realizing the self, what happens? That is what he is saying here. So, not only that, he becomes Atmarama. Remember Atmarama, the words. Atmarama, he becomes, because he is experienced in the soul. Krishna mentions that in the earlier chapter also. Bhagavad Gita is pointing out always towards the soul. Pointing out all the time towards the soul. Yes, Atmaradirevadasya. Atmaradirevasya. Atmatruptascha manava. Atmanyeva sandushtasya nasya karyam na vidyade. Krishna saying there that yas atmaradi revasya, if that atmaradi has happened to him, then atmatruptascha manava, he is totally satisfied. There is no more inquiry after that. Atmanyeva sandushta, he is completely content with everything and always happy. And tasya karyam na vidyade, he has nothing to gain after that in this world. Tasya karyam na vidyade, he has nothing to gain after that in this world. Because nothing to gain after that. So, by not doing, he's not going to lose anything. And sometimes he may do something in this world just for fun. Just for fun. In the sense that you may find him doing certain things in this world, but yam labdhva, because he has got this treasure inside of self-realization inside, therefore, manyatena adhigam tata. So he has nothing more to gain. Whatever we have spoken here, he thinks that he has nothing more to gain and nothing more important than this. Nothing else he considers more important than this. He has nothing to gain. And this is the state of acharyas. All the great acharyas referred to in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada is referred to in the Bhagavatam also, so many great personalities, isn't it? Great acharyas. Why they differ from us? Because they all had this taste of the soul. Therefore, they don't require any recognition from us. Any recognition from us. Nor the books what they have written does not require our recognition. Our recognition. Just like in the material life, when somebody writes a very important or a very famous novel, he gets awarded Nobel Prize and all that, isn't it? Booker Prize, Nobel Prize, these are all given to literature, I think, isn't it? There's Nobel Prize for literature, I know, but there's some Booker Prize also. Yeah, for some famous book, some famous author, he's awarded. All the acharyas don't need all this from us. Their books speaks something different, something on a much higher level. Their recognition is that their realization. That's why the books they have written and spoken and given to us speaks from that level, that our recognition has no meaning there, has no value, and it has no meaning at all. So yam labdhva chabaram labham manyade nathikam tada tasmin sthido na dukhena guru napi vichalyade. Krishna says here that that person who has got that soul realization inside, atma labham, he is, in the Bhagavatam the word uses nijalabha tushtaha. He has got that profit, and that is the greatest profit in this life he has made. In while Sukadeva Goswami is introduced in the Srimad Bhagavatam first time, if you look in the Bhagavatam first canto, you will see the word used nijalabha tushtaha. Sukadeva Goswami did not come to this world thinking that all the other people will glorify him. This is the nature of all the self-realized advanced souls. Any self-realized soul, he does not want any recognition from this world. He will not look for it because he has experienced the higher thing. What does he want from us then after that? We make a mockery of all the things. That's another side. But they don't need any recognition, any kind of appreciation, or you have done well in spiritual life, or any such statement from us. It doesn't want it. It doesn't want to have, because he has got that. Yes, means tidoena dukhena gurunapi vichalyate yam labdhva chabaram labham manyate nadhikam tada. We should know these things. Why? Because our tendency is, if somebody says to us, oh, he is very advanced, we will also think, oh, let's go and glorify him, we will join everybody else. He is not looking for anybody's glorification. He doesn't want anything. As I mentioned, when they wrote their literature, all their commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, Ekadash Bhagavadam, and similarly Brahma Sutram and all, when they have written their commentary, they were not looking for, oh, other people will read this book and they will glorify me. No, it is their self-realization that is flowing through that highly realized state of the self. And they are engaged in that happiness of the soul. Therefore, and yasmin sthito na dukhena, and once he establishes in that situation, initially it will come in the samadhi state. Eventually, that will become our steady state. Initially, it will come as a reflection from the soul, but through the intelligence, it will come as a reflection. But later on, that will be our steady state. We will not fall again from that state. Just like, if we are permanently situated in that state, then there is no more anxiety after that. What Krishna is saying here is, if you look at that verse, he says, yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunapi vijalyade. If you come to that state, there is never again, no distress can attack you, or no distress can have any effect on you anymore. Because you are not in the identity with the body, mind, intelligence. Distress is when you are with the body, when you are with the mind, when you are with the intelligence. So a person who is actually wants to escape from this material life, of the miseries of the material world, the process is self-realization only. Not bhupa, not NHS, nothing. They won't help. That is temporary patching up work. You can do this, you can do that. But real solution to the problem of the miseries of material life is self-realization. There's no other problem. That's what Krishna is stressing again and again, this point here. So he says here that examples are given, that once he has come back and he will settle down in that state, in the heart, he comes to that and settles down there, then he does not want to go out anymore. An example is given like that. There was a ship landed in the docks, and a crow went into the ship and sat there. After some time, crow slept. The ship went in the sea. Ship traveled a long way, and then the crow woke up. And the crow got up and wanted to go back to see the land, so it started flying. And then it went in one direction towards the north. For a long way it went, it couldn't find anywhere, it came back. Went to the south, couldn't find, came back. Went to the east, came back. Went to the west, came back. Eventually the crow decided that it's better to stay in the ship. So similarly, when self-realization happens, we will not have that temptation anymore to go outside. Even if it goes outside, very soon you will come back and find that the self-realized state is better than the material happiness what you can get from the matter, from the material world. So that realization will come, and eventually you will settle down in that steady state of the self. These are examples to stress this point. Doesn't that mean that all these examples are perfect situation? But the nature of the soul is, the self-realization is like that. So Krishna says here one important point. When he is situated like that, yasmin sthito na dukhena guruna abhivijayate, even if it is the greatest distress that comes in this life, he will not be shaken by that. He will not be affected by that because he knows who he is. So where is the question of getting distress? Why do we have suffering in this world? Because we don't know who we are. That's why we are suffering. We are not suffering because of the problems of this world. We are not suffering because that we have got these illnesses. We are suffering because we don't know who we are. That's why we are suffering. That is the point Krishna is making here. Yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunapi vijayate. He can stop suffering only at this point when he realizes what he is. Otherwise it will continue. So even the most unbearable misery comes to him, even then, if he is situated in that state, it will not move him. He won't be affected by that. That is the symptom of self-realization. Symptom of self-realization. So, normally, in the normal state, even a little things happens here, our mind will move, isn't it? Our mind will move. But if it is in the proper state of self-realization, whatever happens, he will not move. Yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunabhi vijayate. And Krishna says, now is the next important statement after that. That state, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. Krishna says like that, isn't it? Yogam yogasam idam. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. Sa nischayena yoktavyo yogino anirvinna chetasa. Yogino anirvinna chetasa. Tam vidya dukkha, we have to understand that very well. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. If you understand this statement from Krishna, then, and if you apply that every time when you suffer in this world, then you will know how powerful that statement is, Krishna's statement is. We suffer in this world unnecessarily, for so many unnecessary things we suffer, isn't it? We carry a lot of burden on our shoulders, which we think that we are the ones who are running the show, and it is our responsibility, and due to various attachments or whatever we call that, we suffer. The result is that we suffer. That's all I can say. What the problem is doesn't matter. It may be anything. Attachment to something, attachment to or aversion to something, and we blame others that has caused the problem, this caused the problem, everything. Krishna is saying here, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. If you understand that statement properly, Krishna says here, Krishna gave a definition here, yogam, yogasam idam. For that sentence finishes with that. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. Yogam is the one Krishna given to that. Dukkha samyoga viyogam. Yogam, Krishna says here, anything that creates distress for you in this world, if you give it up, Krishna says that is yogam. Anything that creates distress for you, if you are able to give it up, Krishna says you are in the yoga state. For example, distress can come from other persons, isn't it? Say you have enemies, if you have any connection with them, samyogam, viyogam. Samyogam means association, viyogam means separation, isn't it? Samyogam and viyogam. Tam vidya, Krishna says the knowledge is, a person who has got knowledge, dukkham samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. That means he knows all these objects are giving me only distress at the end in life. Sometimes relatives, sometimes friends, sometimes enemies. They are all giving some form of distress to me at some point in time in some way or the other. Whether it is close relatives, doesn't matter. Father, mother, brother, sister, wife, children, all of them is included in that list. Krishna is saying here, if you know that they are all the objects of distress for you, and you are able to keep that distance from them, dukkha samyoga viyogam, Krishna says it is yogam. You see, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yogasam idam. Krishna's point is very important here. That Krishna says here that yogam is already there in us. Yogam is already there in us. It is not something to be achieved by any means. But why the yogam is not happening to us? That is the question we have to ask. Because all that objects, whether it is not necessarily, it's not necessary, it has to be a person. It has to be some objects also. If you know that they are only going to cause distress for you at some point or the other, and if you are able to keep that attachment away from them, then you are in the yoga state. That is the only way you can stay in the state of yoga. This is the point Krishna is making here. Otherwise, if you are completely driven by all our emotions and attachments in this world, Krishna says it is not possible to reach the state of yoga. To reach the state of yoga. Because Krishna has to say these things. Why? Because we are going to go through this dhyanam process. And in dhyanam process, if all these chitavrittis are coming one after the other, I have to keep my strong attachment to the wife, children, family, this, that, everyone. And I want to do dhyanam also, it will not happen. Either we can have this or we can have that. So Krishna is very clear and straightforward about this to tell us, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. Anything that will give you distress, you have to know where to break it, where to cut it off at that point. That does not mean that we have to walk out of the house straight away now that I don't have any attachment for it. That is not what it's saying. Krishna is saying inside that has to happen. If it doesn't happen, it will not work. That's why all this chanting, all the other things what we do, at the same time lot of attachment everywhere else, Krishna says yoga state won't happen to that person. Tam vidya dukkha sam yogam viyogam yoga sam idam. So what is happening to us, all these different objects in this world or different persons in this world, we are identifying with them. They are not us. They are different, isn't it? They are different persons or different objects. And we are identifying with them and thinking that they are us. They are related to us. They are connected with us. And that is called samyogam. And we keep that samyogam all the time. So if we keep that samyogam means this, that all others, everyone is a person in this world. All, whether it is father, mother, brother, sister, wife, husband, children, uncle, aunt, any relationship, or other good close friends. Sometimes people say, oh, he's a very good friend of mine, they will say. He'll do anything for me, what I tell him to do. So many foolish understanding about all these things, isn't it? People think like that. In this world, you are on your own. It is wrong to think that all these people are with me. They will all be with me all the time to protect me. And if I don't do it, what will happen to them? This is all our maya inside. That's what he's talking to us. If you take Bhagavad Gita and accept Krishna's words, Krishna is saying to us, anything you know will create distress for you at some point in time. Any object in this world or any individual in this world, they are all causes of distress for you at some point or the other. And that is called samyogam, keeping them as mine. They are mine, they are my friends, they are my family, they are my this, my that. That is samyogam. And Krishna says here, when that happens, if you give up that samyogam, you are in the yoga state. If you give up that samyogam, you are in the state. So we ourselves have gone and tied ourselves with all these people in this world. We ourselves have done that. Because somehow or the other, in a very subtle level, we have identified with them very strongly. That's why it has happened. Remember that story we mentioned about that before many times. A person was standing near the river bank. So a few others were waiting, standing there as well, along with him. Suddenly they saw a blanket was coming in the river from the upstream. A blanket was coming down in the water. So this person thought, it's a blanket, let me go and get it. He ran, jumped into the water and swam and got hold of the blanket. After he got hold of the blanket, he realized that it's not exactly a blanket. It's something different. So he was struggling to leave it and come back, but he couldn't leave it. The people who were standing on the shore, they could not understand why he should not leave it and come back if he can't bring the blanket here. So they were shouting at him, leave the thing and come back, because the current was so strong and it was taking him further down. He says to them at that time, I want to leave, but it's not leaving me. He says, it's not leaving me. Why? It was not a blanket, it was a bear. You see? It's the same situation we are in. We have gone and identified ourselves with all the people in this world, relatives, friends and everyone. And we are holding them very tightly with us. And now we are saying, I can't leave them now because they are mine. Krishna is saying here, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. Unless you leave that attachment, Krishna says yogam is not possible. Yogam is not possible. Therefore, Krishna says, for prior to dhyanam, meditation, all these things have to happen. We thought it is very simple, isn't it? Chant 16 rounds and go back to Golok. Plane is coming from there. Plane is on its way to take us there. Isn't it? If we are the type of people, if we go there, imagine what will happen there. With all our attachment. We will say to Krishna, look, my fiancée is there. Can you bring her as well? That will be the first thing. Or we will say, my father, mother, they have not come here. Where are they? My brother, sister, they are still there. So why should they be there? I have come. Why not they also come with me? This is how the Krishna is saying there. Tam vidya dukkha. Here itself you sort out all these connections, he says, before you come to me. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. Very straightforward. All these changes must happen inside, at least in internal level. Attachment is there in this world. Nobody is saying that. It is not that we have to act like stones in this world. But we have to know where to draw the line. We have to know where to draw the line. If we don't learn that, where to draw the line, simply suffer in life. That's all it is at the end. People will come in life, they will leave you and go also. They will die, they will go. You will also die and you will also go, creating a lot of misery for others as well. So this is the nature of this world. There's nobody can do anything about it. That's the way it's created. So Krishna's point is, this is why these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, prior in the Dhyana Yogam chapter, Krishna has put in right in the middle, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. If you are a yogi, if you are practicing any yoga, whether it is jnanam or bhakti or karmam, doesn't matter, this apply. This apply to all. You can't have this attachment to this world, powerful attachment to these individuals of this world or to any objects in this world and say that you are practicing bhakti yogam. That's not possible. Your bhakti and all is only not taking off. It is still on the ground. It is still running on the runway back and forth. It's not lifting. It is not going up. The plane is not lifting. Why? Because it's very strongly anchored here in this world. So that's why Krishna says there that that the tam vidya dukkha samyogam, because that not only the things outside. We are now talking about family, friends, relatives and all that. Even apart from that, and the society and all that, even your own body, the mind, intelligence, they also give you distress. If you know that very well, you won't get attached to the body either. That's the point. That even if you know that this very same material body which you are caring for, if you think that it is not going to give you distress, one day it will give you distress as well. So, even with this body, Krishna says, your attitude must be the same. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam, viyogam yoga samyidam. Only then we are in the state of yoga. Why is it like that? Because thinking that I am this body and all these are mine and this is called a samyogam. Samyogam means that, isn't it? Actually, this samyogam doesn't exist. That is another beauty of that. This samyogam doesn't exist. Because of the ajnanam inside, avidya inside, ignorance inside, that that we are feeling this samyogam, this attachment. It's very easy to prove that, isn't it? This attachment is not a genuine thing to anybody. It's not a genuine thing. Why is it like that? Because you can see, as soon as you go to deep sleep, where is your so-called friends? Where is your so-called relatives? Where is your so-called family? In that state, there is nothing existing. Isn't it? So every day, you are out of this attachment for some time at least in the deep sleep. Only when you come to the waking state, back the whole thing comes back. All these so-called friends, relatives, family, and everyone comes back into the consciousness again and suffer again, start suffering from that. And as soon as you get to deep sleep, the whole misery goes. All misery goes away. There is why it's said that it is not a real thing. Because it's not there permanently. It's only there when you are in the identification with the body and identification with the mind and completely in the bodily concept of life. So, Krishna says here that all these things are actually doesn't exist and it never existed in the past either. Were all these relatives and friends, were they with me when you were born? When we were born, there was nobody there. Some people were there. We had no attachment at that time. As we grow up in this world, all these kinds of attachment are built up with different people in this world, and then it becomes a huge circle around us. And we get caught up in that circle and suffer day in and day out. That's what happens with that. So that's why Krishna says here, so then anything happens to them, then we suffer. Oh, something has happened to my wife, something has happened to my father, something happened to my mother, all these feelings, and then start suffering because of that. So, and you can also see when they die and go away from this world, after sometimes it's all gone. It lasts for a year sometimes, maybe less sometimes, not more than that. And eventually it's all in the memory. Oh, such a person did live. And certain things you may remember for some time, but you're not going to mourn about that the rest of the life, are you? Because then you realize it that everyone is subjected to the same death. Everyone is subjected to change in the body. Everyone has to go through this experience, and these connections are all Maya. Maya's connections, this is Maya's linked us like this with various people in this world. That is our prarabdham, that you have to go through this, but suffering in that way. But this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken here, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam, yoga samyogam. Krishna says, if you want to come to the platform of yoga, this samyogam must go, and viyogam, samyoga viyogam should not have any effect on us. So, as soon as we die, we forget about that. But because this connection, this relationship is not real. That is why it is like that. It is not real. So, but although it is not real, it makes us feel it is real, and after a while it leaves us and goes away. And because we have, in reality, we have no connection with anything in this world. And therefore, samyoga viyogam. Therefore, samyoga viyogam. From samyogam, we should know that with intelligence, that none of them is true. None of this relationship is true. In some, what samyogam, one, that's power of samyogam. That means samyogam means this attachment we have with others in any form or to objects, whatever it is, doesn't matter. Whatever we have to others or objects in this world, knowing very well with intelligence that it is not the truth, and knowing that in that way is called viyogam. Samyogam is developing that attachment. Viyogam is breaking away that attachment from that. But for transactions in this world, you need all this. That's the problem. See, as soon as you start transactions in this world, you need all these things. They will be there, parents will be there, and relatives will be there, and they will all be there. But if you get caught up in that, then you are lost. Then you won't be able to come out of that. For vyavaharam, there is nothing wrong. You have to do the vyavaharam, transactions with them. But if you develop attachment in there, and if you start thinking it's all absolute truth, and start dealing with that, it will kill you. It will kill you. It will finish us up. And then the distress will come. So Krishna here, if you look at in that verse, you will see, any object, anything in this world, whether it is a person, whether it is an object or anything, no matter what it is, anything that will give you distress, Krishna is calling it by the word dukkham. You see? Anything, doesn't matter what it is, anything what gives you distress in this world, Krishna calls it as dukkham. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam. Tam vidya dukkham samyogam viyogam yogam samyidam. That's the word. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. Viyogam yoga samyidam. Sa nischayena yoktavyo yogino anirvinna chetasaha. Nischayena yoktavyo. He has to make that firm decision inside that all these things are not me, nothing to do with me. It all happened because I happened to be here, happened to be among so many people, but I am something different than all these things. I have put all these people in my consciousness and thinking they are mine, they are mine, they are mine, and it is, I am become that. That's what I have done. That's why Krishna is saying there, sa, sa, nischayena yoktavyo. You have to make that deliberate decision at that point. Nischayena yoktavyo. Yogo anirvinna chetasaha. That is the yoga state. Anirvinna chetasa. All the, if you look at the translation, Krishna says here, one should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with undeviating determination and faith. One should abandon without exception, that is for the next verse, all material desires born of false ego, and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. That is for the next verse. So here, Krishna says here, that tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. This is what the important point there. All that verse is important. Which one? That Krishna mentions that yam labdhva chabaram labham anyade nadhiyam tada. Tasmin sthidena dukkhena gurunapi vichalyade. Yasmin sthidona dukkhena gurunapi vichalyade. Then Krishna says yam labdhva chabaram labham anyade nadhiyam tada. Yasmin sthidona dukkhena gurunapi vichalyade. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. Krishna says, you are a yogi only if this happens. Samvidya dukkha samyogam, yogam, yoga samnidam. We all say we are all bhakti yogis, isn't it? Bhakti is bhakti. Bhakti yoga we are practicing. We think bhakti yoga is just chanting only. That is, we are bhakta, we become straight bhakti yogi. Unless we accept all Krishna is saying here in the Bhagavad Gita, this is all preparations to the parabhakti state. Not to the kind of bhakti what we are interested. We are interested in the business with Krishna, what we get out of it. So that is not the bhakti in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. That is why any bhakti process, any yoga process, whether it is karmam, jnanam, yogam, it doesn't matter. It is only properly situated, we have to be situated properly in that state. And that is why Krishna is saying this. Tam vidya dukkha samyogam, viyogam yoga samyidam. And he says here, yasmin sthito sa nischayena yoktavyo yogino anirvinna chetasaha. Nischayena yoktavyo. He has to be firmly fixed up in that. So, so the intelligence that if you have this understanding that all these objects and persons in this world, they are going to create distress for you, and and all our activities also, which will create distress, Krishna calls it as dukkha. Not only the objects, not only the persons, but even our activities which will create distress for us in future, Krishna calls it as dukkham. And what else Krishna calls as dukkham? Even our desires inside, which will develop into dukkham later. So develop into dukkham. So that word dukkham in that covers a very wide range of things, isn't it? Very wide range of things. Dukkha means what all? First thing, all the persons with whom we are attached to. Number one, all the persons, individuals, whether it's friends, relatives or whatever that is. Secondly, all the material objects in this world where we have attachment to the wealth, gold or house or estate or whatever that is. All that is included in that. Then all our activities, material activities which we may perform, which will create attachment and bring distress to us later. That's also included in that word dukkham. And what else? All other thoughts in our head or in our mind. Chitavrti is what's going through, creating a lot of desires, and which is sangalpam, in other words, referred to. All of them is also included in that dukkham. So that's why Krishna says, tam vidya dukkha samyogam viyogam yoga samyidam. For a yogi who wants to progress on the spiritual path, he has to free from all these things. Out of that, the thoughts in the head or desires in that, it's very difficult to deal with straight away, isn't it? But attachment to the persons in this world, attachment to objects in this world, that is to some extent we can control it. If we decide to, if we understand, accept what Krishna is saying, that is to some extent in our control. But if it comes to the question of sangalpam and all our activities, even activities also to an extent we can control, but chitavrittis will not come down unless we stop all the other attachments elsewhere. If there is a lot of attachment to other persons, other objects in this world, they themselves will create so much chitavritti inside. And where is the question of yogam then? Yoga means chittavritti nirodha. Patanjali says like that. Yoga means stopping chittavritti. But if we increase the chittavritti, simply by increasing our attachment all over the world, where is the question of yoga? Yoga will never happen. That is why it is so difficult that we find it that everything is difficult, difficult, difficult. Then what will happen? Spiritual life also gets very difficult. It should not happen like that. We should accept what Krishna is saying there. Krishna is pointing out to us very clearly. You can't see more straightforward than this. And he says to us that, and this is called that buddhi, buddhi which has gone and caught hold of that, that will give us distress. And that connection of the intelligence to that should be broken. And that is samyogam, dukkha samyoga viyogam, yoga samyidam, that is called yogam. In the Shastram, it is another word used is adhyasa niragaranam. That's another word, adhyasam. This is all adhyasam. Adhyasam is a beautiful word. Why? Because you don't have an equivalent word in other language for that. Adhyasam means this, that in my own mind, I have made up certain things and I cultivated that strongly and it has become a part of me. That's adhyasam. That is adhyasam. I gave more importance to it than what it deserves. More importance than what it deserves. For example, relationships with people. Relationship with people is like that, isn't it? Attachment is there. Family members, relatives, all there is attachment there. But if I start making that as the topmost priority in life, that is adhyasam. That is adhyasam. It has its position, but you have to know where to leave it. What is its priority list? Where is that stands? If you bring that above self-realization and keeps that as the whole object, then what will happen? Krishna says adhyasam niragaranam. Adhyasam must stop. So that adhyasam, Krishna says here, that remove that adhyasam. Stop that adhyasam inside. So what I am not, removing them. That is adhyasam niragaranam. I am not all that. I am not this relatives. I am not this friends. I am not this objects. I am not this karma, none of them, I have nothing to do with that. I am, my nature is nitya shuddha buddha mukta swarupam. I am eternal, I am pure, I am full of consciousness, isn't it? And I am always liberated as per the Shastram. If I am all that, why do I consider that all this is me? That is called avidya. That is called the avidya in us. And that is why it's called adhyasam. It's adhyasam that has made us to think all this is mine, they are my friends, they are my family, they are my relatives, this, that and the other has come from that. So adhyasam is something to be given up, Krishna says here. So removing that adhyasam, so nischayena, and if we remove this by proper discrimination within ourselves, if we remove this, you will remain as you are. You will know as you are. You will remain as you are. This is interesting. Why? Because you can see the soul inside wants to be on its own. It doesn't want a lot of people all the time around, all these connections in this world. By nature, that's the nature of the soul. It doesn't want all these things. Practical example, sometimes even somebody whom you like very much, you spend some time with him. After a while, you want to be alone. Have you noticed that? In spite of your best efforts, you may like that person very much. This happens between husband and wife. This happens between mother and the children. In very close relationships, even there you can see this. Why? Because the nature of the soul is like that. Bhaktam ekandinam kochet. It wants to be alone at some time. It doesn't want all this because it knows that it is pulling more and more towards him. Unnecessary burden. And he wants to be independent of that. That is there in the Shastra. But these are things we don't take notice of because we think that you can see this all the time happening. Even among friends, there'll be good friends and these friends will go out together, enjoy a lot. After a while, they also say, oh, I'm going now. I have to go. Had enough of it. A few hours, a few days it may last. Even between husband and wife, after some time, they want to go on their own. Had enough of each other. It happens to everybody. It's not that it happens one place. It happens everywhere. They get tired of each other. So same thing between the husband and wife, between the mother and the children even. When the children gets advanced in age, mother also is very old. Mother says, oh, you stay where you are, I stay where I am. Because it's enough. They had enough of all this. Why? It's the nature of the soul is like that. You can't change. That is the very nature of the soul. So that's why it is said, Bhaktam Ekandinam Kuchit. So, Krishna says here that Nischayena Yoktavyam iti Ishvara Vajanam iti Vyasa Vajanam. So, if you look into the commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, it's not spoken there. These things are not spoken as Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita like that. That's not how it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita's Bhashyams, in the commentaries, Acharya's commentaries, what they say like this. Nischayena Yoktavyam iti Ishvara Vajanam. This is coming from the Supreme, Absolute, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara. It is His statement. It is not spoken in a light-hearted way, in other words. Not spoken that it is Ishvara Vajanam. Or it says it is Vyasa Vajanam. It is Veda Vyasa statement. And it is a statement of the Absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how it is spoken. Why it is spoken like that? Because if you just say it is Krishna's opinion, some people may say, oh, well, it's Krishna's opinion, isn't it? My opinion is something different. There's a chance of saying like that, people mentioning like that. But, so, Nischayena Yoktavyam, iti Ishvara Vajanam. Ishvara Vajanam, it is Krishna's supreme, absolute supreme personality of Godhead. It is His statement, which is coming through Bhagavad Gita in this way. So, Yanishchayena Yoktavyam. So, while saying that, Nishchayena Yoktavyam, Acharya Swamiji's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he says, giving a good bang, he says, either you accept it or you suffer, that's all. This is a choice given there. So, it's better to accept it rather than questioning it. It doesn't help. The simple truth is spoken, and when the truth is spoken, we have to accept it without any further questioning that truth. And our nature is always to find some loopholes in that, isn't it? There is no loophole, Krishna is saying here. Ishvara, Supreme Personality of Godhead is saying, Ishvara Vajanam, Ishvara statement is this. So there is no question of, Ishvara means what? Controller, isn't it? Supreme Controller. That is the way He has created this universe and the living entities in this world. So, Nischayena Yoktavyaha, that yoga has to be deliberately accepted, fully accepted without any questioning, and it should be brought into practical life. Anirvinna Chetasaha. And without feeling hate towards anyone or anything on this matter, then, and without getting frightened of this, one has to practice in life. That's what is more important. Without getting frightened of it. Because when Krishna says all these things, we get frightened, isn't it? What's Krishna trying to do? My whole security is in my family. Is He trying to break my family and throw me into the so-called spiritual life and walk around in this world? What's going to happen to me? All these thoughts will come. It's natural because people are very much absorbed in the family life. First thing, they are a little bit careful coming to Salsangam, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam and all that. Because these things, if they start going in, it'll cause a lot of problems. So they will be worried about it. So that's why it is mentioned here that Ishvara Vajanam. It is Ishvara Vajanam. Either we accept it or we have no, here there is no, what do they call it? It's not a choice question. There's no choice given in here. So accepting them. Anirvanna Chetasa. And without getting tired, exhausted on this, one should practice this. This, what Krishna has spoken here, in order to make that dhyanam to happen. If you are serious about spiritual life, all these are very important issues also. So, one should never feel tired of it. When we are practicing these instructions from Krishna, one should never feel tired of it. And also, one should never feel I had enough of it. That also should not feel. Because if you start feeling, oh, I had enough, I can't take it anymore, then you are lost. Krishna is not lost. We have lost. We have lost it then. Because this is what will protect us. That's how we have to understand that. You see, chanting the holy name of Ramachandra, Lord Rama's name, Rama Rama, why is it given so much? It is called a Taraka Mandram, isn't it? Rama, the name Rama, is called a Taraka Mandram. It says that if you chant Ramachandra's name, Rama Rama, for a very, very large number of times in life, like Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It's also a very powerful mantra, the holy name of Ramachandra. If you chant that, it is called Taraka Mantra. Why? Because at the time of death, if you chant this Taraka Mantra, Lord Shiva himself comes and chant the mantra in your ears at the time of death. This is what the Upanishads are saying about this Ramanamam, the holy name of Ramachandra. So the potency is there. So if we chant the holy name, this vidya, tam vidya dukkha samyogam, that vidya will become clearer in our head. Will become, clarity will come. Therefore, we have to chant the holy name. In order that this illusion don't overpower us, won't take care, control us too much, we have to chant the holy name. So while chanting the holy name, eventually will slowly break this attachment to material life in that way. So therefore it is called, with firm determination, this has to be practiced. And by practicing that, all other desires which are in our imagination, in Sangalpam, that should be removed, and we have to stay in our Swarupam, in our spiritual identity. And that is what Krishna is going to talk about in the next verse. So this appearance of the going back to Krishna, going back to the soul, is the goal of every jiva, every conditioned soul. That is its goal, to go back to the soul. And only when we get to that state of realization, we will have complete satisfaction as well. Otherwise, we will never be satisfied. Our problems will never be resolved. We are going to have problems in life, one thing or the other. Krishna is saying, the answer to all these problems, all these miseries and distress in this life, is only self-realization. So, dharmam, artham, kamam. None of these things will give, out of the four, chaturvida purushartham it's called, isn't it? Dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. Four things. We talk about that all the time, isn't it? So out of these four, the first three, religiosity, economic development and sense gratification, will never give any ultimate relief from this distress. Ultimate relief it won't give. Atyantikam. Permanent relief from this problem will never happen with the first three. It's only the last one, which is known as the liberation or moksham, will offer this, and that is coming from Brahmajijnasa. Brahmajijnasa means the desire for self-realization. In the Bhagavatam, if you take now, you will see there, kamasya indriya preeti labho jiveda yavada jivasya tattu dijnyasa na arthoyas cheha karmabhi. You will see this verse in the first canto, in the second chapter itself. Sudha Goswami says to Shavanagrashi, kamasya indriya preeti, sense gratification, what will happen? Indriya preeti. You can gratify your senses with the material desires inside. Labho jiveda yavada. What is the profit from that? He is asking. Sudha Goswami is saying, what's the profit from that? Labho jiveda yavada. Jivasya tattva jityasa. If a jiva, a conditioned soul, if he has got tattva jityasa inside to know the truth and to get liberated in this life, otherwise this whole spiritual life is all a waste of time. As far as Sudha Goswami is concerned, jivasya tattva jityasa adhado brahma jityasa. Keep on saying this. Brahma Sutram says this, isn't it? So jivasya tattva jityasa na artha yas cheha karma bhi. By this karmam and this artham, what is all going to happen in this world? What are you going to gain? At the end, they will bring distress, as Krishna said before, isn't it? Worked whole life, earned a lot of money, and one day we have to go. We leaving all those things there, isn't it? And then you start thinking, I shouldn't have worked so hard. But then it's too late, you worked for it. Nartoyas cheha karmavi. That's why Krishna says here that jiva must have tattva jityasa. Jiva must have tattva jityasa. Then he should have that jityasa to know what is the truth. And that jityasa makes the mind more concentrated. Concentrated. And the mind which has been wandering around all other kinds of sense objects, it eventually comes and gets fixed up in the soul. So, buddhi siddham. He says here that sadbhava kirtanadishu shivam. So, this understanding of the realization that Krishna says here, that comes from this, that in the meditation process, Krishna says Sadbhava Kirtanadishu. It's words about that in the Shivananda Lahari. It says like this.
Buddhisthira bhavidumi ishwarapada palpam saktavaduri ahineva sadasmarandi salbhavana smarana darshana kirtanadi samohideva shiva mantra japena vinde.
Then you are chanting the holy name. Somebody is chanting Krishna's holy name continuously. Why is he chanting? Because when we have attachment for the holy name, we start chanting the holy name more, isn't it? 16 rounds we chant because we have been told to do it. But you'll start chanting more when you become developing attachment to the holy name. You'll start chanting more than what is prescribed. What is prescribed. So, when that taste happens, and automatically smaranam, memory of Krishna comes, and automatically, and one will start chanting the holy name as well. So, this chanting of the holy name, what will happen? Buddhisthire bhavadu ishvara padavalpam. Buddhisthire bhavadu ishvara padavalpam. When the intelligence becomes steady, it gets fixed at Krishna's lotus feet. At Krishna's lotus feet. And in order to do that, you can see this example given in the Shastrams like this. That newly a person got married. Man and a woman, they got married each other. So afterwards they got separated. The husband had to go away somewhere and the wife was alone at home. So without any effort, she remembers the husband still, isn't it? Without any effort, she remembers the husband still. So she'll be waiting for his coming back. So similarly, our intelligence also is waiting for going back to the soul. It's also waiting for going back to the soul. But because we don't give the opportunity for that, we don't give the opportunity for that, therefore we suffer in this world. Our buddhi also is looking for that enlightenment from the soul, enlightenment from the soul, but we don't give the opportunity for that. So once that Krishna says, he says here that buddhisthiro bhavito ishvara padavalpa sakta. If attachment for Krishna's lotus feet has, or to Krishna means the soul, has somehow developed inside, vaduri rahiniva sadasmarandi, and if the mind gets absorbed, intelligence starts absorbed in the soul, in relationship with, in connection with the soul, exactly like a vadhu, a newly married wife will have no difficulty in remembering her husband. Sadbhavana smarana darshana kirtanadi. Smaranam darshanam kirtanam. All these three things that sadbhavana one should cultivate. Sadbhavana means this memory of the soul one should cultivate within oneself, that I am spirit soul. He has to cultivate himself. And in order to do that cultivation, smaranam darshanam kirtanam. All these things are required. Smaranam, remembrance, that who I am, remembering that always. Darshanam, remember, seeing Krishna and remembrance that Krishna's presence inside. And kirtanam, glorification. Sammohideva mantra jabena vinde. And also through the continuous chanting of the holy name. Holy name chanting is for this purpose. This thinking that, oh, I have to chant a certain number and I have to finish it. That is a very poor understanding of the holy name, chanting the holy name. So very poor understanding of chanting the holy name. Thinking that, oh, I've been told today 64, I'll do 64. Tomorrow I'm told I'm 32, I'll do 32. I'll finish with that. That is not a very proper understanding of chanting the holy name. Chanting the holy name means that through that chanting, what is going to happen? That attachment to Krishna, remembrance of Krishna must develop inside. That's why chanting the holy name, kirtanam, and all the other activities, smaranam, darshanam, nine processes, all this is meant for developing that sadbhavana, that bhavana inside of Krishna. Krishna's bhavana inside. Penavinde. And intelligence in that state is waiting for self-realization. And once that has developed, then there will be no taste for anything else in this world. So that is why gopis, when they have come to that state, they say, itara raga vismaranam nranam adhara viranaste adharamratam. There is in the Gopiyagidam, if you look, they will say, they came to that state at the end.
this maranam of Krishna, or remembrance of Krishna, has become so strong inside, gopis are saying there, that idararaga vismaranam nrinam adharaviranaste adharamrudam. Idararaga vismaranam nrinam. Even other things, even if they want to remember, they can't remember. Such strong was the meditation in gopis' mind of Krishna. Krishna has entered the heart and took control of the heart to such an extent, even when the gopis wanted to think about other things, they couldn't think about it. So much filled with Krishna inside. Idararaga vismaranam nrinam adharaviranaste adharamrutam. So, Gopiya Gidam, if you read, you will see from the philosophical side, if you look at it, it's gopis' realization. Gopis' realization. Krishna has gone in, and inside filled with thoughts of Krishna, they couldn't think about anything else in this world. They were in that state. We are trying to fill Krishna for a second, we struggling with it. Isn't it? So that is the difference where Krishna, what is Krishna has spoken here. So, idararaga vismaranam nrinam, once the attachment for Krishna has happened, that all attachment elsewhere goes away. So, vairagyam will come in a natural way. And continuously chanting the holy name, meditation, Krishna's form, and kirtanam, all these things creates that sadbhavana. And also it says here, he continuously talks about Krishna's pastimes and also imagining the Krishna's form inside. All these things will happen in Salsangam. When these stories are spoken properly, all the 10th canto particularly, if it is spoken properly and if it is heard properly, it will meant to create this bhavana inside, this sadbhavana inside. There were famous personalities who spoke Bhagavadam, Ramayanam like that. And there were famous personalities who listened very well. There was a personality, this Ramanujacharya's spiritual master. He was well known for his discourses on Ramayanam. In Srirangam, he sat down and he spoke Ramayana for years and years. At that time, many people used to come and sat and listen to him. And listening to him, they also got inspired to talk about Ramayanam and Ramachandra to others. So they went outside and they started speaking. In that process, there was one person who used to come and sit there. He used to come and listen to the discourses on Ramayanam. When he sat there and he listened, he used to be so absorbed in that, it was very difficult to think anything else for him except what was spoken there. It'll get into his heart very much. And it controlled him so much that one instance, Yuddhakandam, the last chapter of the last canto in the Ramayanam was being discussed. And Periyanambi, who was discussing this, he go on talking about it. And in one instance, Ravana came for the battlefield and suddenly Hanuman jumped into the chariot and gave punch to Ravana on his cheek. Hanuman thinking about all what Ravana has done to Sita Devi and given so much distress to Ramachandra and others, Hanuman could not tolerate, jumped onto the chariot and punched Ramachandra. And this person who was listening, he punched on the next person who was sitting next to him. That is how much he was absorbed in that. Other person didn't take it seriously. Why? Because he knew this person's nature. So much absorption in the katha. Katha is not something, hearing this. Our nature of listening is like this. We hear katha. Is this all true? First thing is this all true? Maybe some old man sitting in Badrinath, he wrote down all these things and thrown at us. This is how our mind will go. I don't know. My mind has been going like that, so therefore I'm saying that. Your mind may be going different way, I don't know. But the thing is this, that katha, when it is spoken with full realization of the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayanam, and if it is heard in the same way, without keeping the mind and intelligence away, as I mentioned before, keeping the mind and intelligence away, when one hears Ramayanam, Bhagavatam, it must have its effect on a person. We will discuss that when we come back to this Bhakti chapter, this 14th chapter again. After we finish this Dhyana Yogam, we'll go back to it again and go by verse. At that time we'll mention this. But important thing to remember that it is the same person. There are examples like this among the listeners also. We have a history of speakers, a lot of history of these speakers. But you should also look at the history of the listeners. When, one instance, Pundanam used to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So speak Srimad Bhagavatam for years and years. And there was one lady, her name was Lakshmi. She used to come and sit there and listen every day with full attention. She hours and hours she sat there and listened. Many, many years she listened to Bhagavatam in this way. And she left with complete Krishna consciousness every minute. In every minute she was so Krishna conscious, simply by the hearing process. Obviously, Pundanam was a great speaker on Srimad Bhagavatam. In one instance, one day, everybody came to hear. And Lakshmi wasn't there. Pundanam in a natural way asked the question, what has happened to Lakshmi today? Nobody knew anything what has happened. From inside, the deity spoke, Lakshmi has arrived here. The deity spoke. The answer came from the deity room that Lakshmi has arrived here. In other words, simply by hearing process alone, she went back to Krishna. So these are history. This is not something you can ignore it. A devotee will accept that. A karmi or a materialist will find it all this, or he wants to do the bring the scientist first with some instruments and he wants to test it whether first they will apply their machine whether he's telling a lie or not, and they will start their way, isn't it? That's their way. But devotee's way is not like that. Devotees can accept this because it can happen. It's not an unusual thing. When Vibhishana surrendered to Krishna, Ramachandra was discussed. I mentioned this before. The whole story of Vibhishana Sharanagati. It's very famous in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Vibhishana Sharanagati. They all love that topic. Why? When before the war happened, they were preparing to cross. They were preparing to cross the sea. That time, Ramachandra was there. Sugriva was there. All the army commanders were there. Hanuman, Angada, Jambavan. They were all sitting there. And they were discussing about the war tactics, the strategy. They were discussing the strategy for the war. So, at that time, the news arrived that Vibhishana wants to surrender. Vibhishana has come in the sky and he was standing there. He sent a message that he wants to surrender to Ramachandra. So, prior to this, what happened was, Vibhishana was advising Ravana, my dear brother, at least now give it up. This idea what you had to bring Sita Devi here and create this offense to Ramachandra, the whole Lanka will be destroyed. You are going to be destroyed. Not only that, the whole Lanka is going to suffer because of that. All kinds of warnings Vibhishana gave to Ravana. Ravana took it in the wrong way. He thought Vibhishana had some dubious plans that he wants to get rid of Ravana and he is not giving me the right advice. That's how it is, isn't it? When you give right advice to some people, if it is not the advice what they are looking for, they will think of you as a troubleshooter or a troublemaker. They'll brand you like that. They'll see he's deliberately trying to create trouble for me. That's the nature of the world. So Vibhishana sat there and advised Ramana for many hours. Ravana would not listen. Eventually, Vibhishana realized that he's not going to listen. The best option for me is to surrender to go and take shelter of Ramachandra. So with Vibhishana, three other Rakshasas also came. Other Rakshasas also came with him. They all came together and from the sky, Vibhishana sent a message of surrender. When the message came, Ramachandra asked everybody there their opinion whether we should accept Vibhishana or not. So he asked a few people, everybody gave different opinion. One Vanara said to Ramachandra, we should not accept him because he is not from our camp. He must be coming as a spy, he said. Then Ramachandra asked another Vanara. Vanara answered, we can accept him, but we should post a spy always to watch him, what his intentions are, what his intentions are. So then again Ramchandra changed and asked somebody else, what should we do with him? Somebody said, we can accept him, but we shouldn't give him much important information to him. We should keep that away from him. And still watch him for some time, how he acts in this with us, whether he is loyal to us or not. We should verify all that before he... And somebody else said, we should extract as much information as possible from him about Ravana's capability. Capability for the war. All these different advices were given. Hanuman was called in. Hanuman said to him, Ramachandra, we should accept him, he said. But in between, the commander's chief was there, Sugriva was there, isn't it? So he called Sugriva and asked Sugriva, Sugriva, what do you think? He says, Sugriva giving, as though he is giving a very valuable advice to Ramachandra, he started telling this advice to him, says to him, we should never accept him. Because you can see, Sugriva was putting his logic behind it. Sugriva's logic was this. Sugriva says to Ramachandra, look, you know who this Vibhishana is. He has even betrayed his own brother. And he has come to your camp. How can you trust him? He says. Ramachandra did not answer. Looked at Lakshmana and smiled. Why? Because the same thing what Sugriva has done. So this happens in this world with all of us also. We will talk all big, big things. When it comes to our own problems, we'll go and do exactly the opposite thing. Whatever we have been preaching to others, we'll go and do the same thing. Isn't it? So Sugriva said like this to Ramachandra. Ramachandra did not even answer Sugriva. He just smiled. With that smile, Valmiki closed the chapter there. Valmiki says that smile was sufficient. Everybody understood. But then Ramachandra answered that in a very nice way. So he didn't want to upset Sugriva because he is the chief. If he upsets Sugriva, the war will suffer. What will happen? Thinking all that, he says to Sugriva, Sugriva, there will never be a brother like Bharata. And I will never have a friend like you. He consoled him like this to keep him pacified. Vanara, isn't it? Only that much brain has gone there. He says, I'll never have a friend like you and I'll never have a brother like Bharata. He said like this and he finished that chapter. So this special listener who I was talking about, who punched the other person, he was there listening to all this. After all this was done, he got up. Normally he won't get up in a satsangam. Normally in good satsangam and people, good listeners, they won't get up and walk out. When somebody is getting up and walk out means the mind is somewhere else. It's a clear proof of that. Sometimes people will look at each other. In this satsangam you can observe all these things. Shall we go? Yeah. Why? Neither of them have any interest. Their mind is somewhere else. So there are so many other plans going on there. Anyway, in satsangam, what happened to him was, he sat down and when he has taken everything so seriously and he was such a good listener, when this Vibhishana surrender was discussed, he got up first time in the satsangam. Payanambi, who was talking about all this time, he was shocked when he got up, because normally he won't get up. Till the whole thing is finished, he won't go away from there. That was his nature. So when he got up, the speaker understood that there is something seriously gone wrong. He says, don't go. What's the matter? He said. So our listener says to him, yeah, I have something to say now, he says. He says to him that this Vibhishana, who has come to Ramachandra to surrender, he has come and Ramachandra kept him in the sky for such a long time before giving him an audience. And he kept on asking with all these Vanaras who were around him, Hanuman, Jambavan, Angada, Sugriva and all these people. And it took him quite a few hours to make that decision, isn't it? Is it true or not, he said to the speaker. Speaker said, yes, it took a while for him to make that decision. Well, that's enough for me. He says, why? Because that Vibhishana has left his brother, Ravana, who was his shelter. He has lost shelter there. Completely lost it. He can't go back now to Ravana. Ravana will kill him. He won't even listen to him. He will just kill him straight away. But he has given up that connection, attachment, everything there. Completely broken away all his relationship with Lanka and Ravana. And he had come. And since he had come and surrendered like that, your Ramachandra wants so much time to discuss whether to give him shelter or not. And if it is like that, what chance have I got? He said. He says, I'm going, took his dhoti and put it on his shoulder and walked out from there, he said. When he was about to leave, Periyanambi called him, no, come back, he said. The story is not over yet. He sat down. He says, that has happened to Vibhishana. But you remember, three Rakshasas had come with him. When Ramchandra took Vibhishana into his custody, gave him the shelter, these three Rakshasas also got along with that. They also escaped from Ravana. So you should understand this, he said. Somewhere in some satsangam, somebody may escape. Along with that, you will also escape. He mentioned it like that to this listener. So what Krishna says here is that this shubha-shubhabhyam, margabhyam, paurushena, prayatnena. That paurusham alone, you see, our mind goes in two different directions, isn't it? Shubham and ashubham. Shubha-shubhena, margabhyam means... Shubha-shubhabhyam, margabhyam. That shubham, ashubham, these two directions the mind will go. Sometimes it will take us in the right direction, sometimes it will go in the wrong direction. Sometimes it will take you to satsangam, sajjanam, association with devotees and things like that. Sometime in the same way, it can go in the wrong direction also. That's why shubha-shubhabhyam, margabhyam, paurushena, prayatnena. According to the vasanas inside, and accordingly, the mind will go in different directions. So, sometimes it will go in the wrong directions also. Through satsangam, through dhyanam, and through our own ichashakti. Ichashakti means our own willpower. We have to keep the mind in the right direction, and that is called a tapasa. Tapasa means this. Tapasa means through the satsangam and through the association of the devotees and through meditation. Meditation includes everything. Chanting the holy name, deity worship, this is all a part of the meditation. Studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Through all that, we have to keep that direction always clear. So, you have to talk to the mind all the time. Why engage in this? Playing in the filthy water or the ditch. So, in one verse it says like this, that that the why is the mind Nityananda rasalayam suramuni swandam sandvambujashrayam swacham sadvijasevidam kalushakal sadvasana vishkradam shambudhyana sarovaram vrajamanoham savadam sastiram kim kshudrashraya palvala brahmana sanjadashramam prapsyasi nityananda rasalayam suramuni swandambujadashrayam nityananda rasalayam. Sometimes in the association of the association with the devotees or sajjanam or that, what one experiences is that Nityananda Rasalayam and Divya Dhyanam, that divine meditation of that, and addressing the mind to go in that direction. So, the swans, they are in the Manasa Sarasa. Swans are considered to be representing you Hamsam, isn't it? Hamsam means Brahmavidya, knowledge of the soul. They are in Kailasam, they play, isn't it? In Manasa Saras, they say there are Hamsams there. So, Hamsams always look for clean places. They want to relish that. And crows look for the filth. So, those whose mind are like the Hamsam swans, they look for salsangam, association with pure devotees, and always their mind is absorbed in Bhagavadam, Bhagavad Gita and spiritual life. Those who are like the crows, they look for sense gratification and all other unwanted things in this world. So it says here, Nityanandarasalayam suramuni swandambujadashrayam swacham sadvijasevidam kalushakral sadvasana vishkradam. Sadvasana vishkradam. That means sadvasana is created inside in such a way that always the mind turns in the right direction. Always mind turns in the right direction. Dvijasevidam kalushakral. Kalusha means that is this thought's relationship with which is related to ragadvesham. Ragadvesha kalusham, it says. Attachment and aversion, wherever it is creating, that will create kalusham. So any situation where there is ragam and dvesham, that will create kalusham. When there is too much ragam and too much dvesham or attachment or aversion, wherever it happens, there it will be kalusham. It will be very poisoned state, no matter where it is. So a devotee, Krishna is saying that a devotee is always thinking about that it, like the hamsam won't be interested in that state. Hamsam won't be interested in such a environment. He is looking for a place in the association of the salsangam or sajjana samsargam. What will happen is the possibility of mind getting absorbed in attachment and aversion goes away. There will be no attachment and aversion. Because why? The truth is spoken, isn't it? The truth is spoken. Suppose you visit friends, relatives and all that. They won't talk to you all these things, would they? They will talk to you where we can enjoy together, where we can have the dinner party, where can we have, what dress we should wear, where should we go shopping. All these ideas they will give it to you. But therefore, that will create ragadvesham. That is why we have to be careful about it. That ragadvesham comes from that kind of association. In a very, very subtle level, it starts first and then develops into serious issues later. But if one is simply, even if one does not make any spiritual advancement, Krishna says, simply listening in satsangam alone will bring the chittavritti down. Mind will come to peaceful state eventually. It has to happen. That is why it mentions here, swacham sadvijasevidam kalushakral sadvasana avishkradam. Swacham means like the glass. It is very clear and transparent, and it also very steady. It doesn't have any more movements inside. Sadvijasevidam kalushakral sadvasana avishkradam. All the kalushyam means this kind of thoughts, aversion, thoughts relationship with attachment and aversion. They will not enter inside, and at the same time, sadvasana avishkritam. Good vasanas will develop inside from satsangam. That is the purpose of going to satsangam. Satsangam does not mean the first day itself we will become self-realized. That's not what it means. What it means is that it is preparing the ground inside. Because chittavritti must come down, and in order that ragadvesha must go away, sadvasana should develop inside, and therefore satsangam. Shambhudhyana sarovaram vrajamano hamsavadam sastiram. That dhyana sarovaram, that lake of the meditation song on the lotus feet of Krishna. Vrajamano hamsavadam sastiram kim kshudra ashraya palvala brahmana sanjadashramam prapsyasi. When it is like that, why one should go and look for this filthy water in the ditch to drink like the crow? That is why it mentions like that. So he says here that Tyagaraja Swami in his prayers says Nidhisala Sukhama. He is asking that question and asking Ramachandra this question. He is sitting with you and singing your glory is nice. Or is it going and glorifying other, the kings and others in the palace? What is the nicest thing for me to do? He's asking. Nidhisala Sukhama is a famous song what he has sung about that. He was invited by the king to come and sing in the palace. He says, no, I'm sitting in the emperor's palace, he says to him. He sends the reply back to the king. The king is smaller compared to the emperor, isn't it? I'm with the emperor, so I don't have to report to the king. That was his answer. Why should I waste my time? Because those days, the kings used to invite these great poets and great musicians and ask them to sing, glorifying them. You have to go and sing there. So he sent the reply, I am sitting here and glorifying the emperor of the whole creation. Why should I come to your palace? That's what that famous song about, Nitisala Sukhama. So, like this, one has to understand that the even while chanting the holy name, one can continue this conversation with Krishna. Because, in another verse, he says here that this mind which is constantly, all the great acharyas, they spoke with the Lord all the time, with Krishna. They had to speak to them, each other. And if you look into their prayers, it's all conversation between the devotees and Krishna. They're talking to each other. And this is how they continued their conversation. Conversation always centered around this thing called the mind inside. Asking Krishna to enter inside the mind and take control of the mind. Because on our own, we find it very difficult to do. That's why it says here in this verse that Ma gacchattvamidastado girishabho mayeva vasam kuru swaminnadi kiradama magamana kandara simantare vartande bahusho mrigamadajusho malsaryamohadaya tanhatva mrigaya vinodarujita labham cha samprapsyasi. It's a very famous verse. Why it's so famous? This verse comes from Shivananda Lahiri. Ajari Swamiji is saying to Lord Shiva like this. He says to him that this song was written in the temple called Sri Shailam, Mallikarjuna Swami's temple. Sri Shailam, that is where it was written. It is this same temple Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first went during his visit to South India. The first temple he visited was this Sri Shailam temple, famous Lord Shiva's temple in Mallikarjuna Swami. He is called Mallikarjuna Swami. Why is that temple famous for? The temple is famous because that is where Pashupat Astram was given to Arjuna. Shiva and Arjuna had a fight, isn't it? Famous fight between Arjuna and Shiva. And after the fight was over, Shiva wanted to test Arjuna's strength. Shiva wanted to test Arjuna's heroic nature. So Shiva took the dress of a hunter, Kirada form. Kirada means hunter. Or a person who is hunts in the forest. He took that dress and came and started fighting with Arjuna. There's a whole story behind it. Arjuna shot an arrow to some animal, and Shiva also shot an arrow, and there was an argument who shot the arrow, whose arrow has killed the boar. And they had the fight about that. They started arguing, and Arjuna did not care, started fighting with Lord Shiva. Shiva also fought with Arjuna, and eventually, pleased with Arjuna's heroic nature, Shiva presented Pashupatastram to him, which he was used later in the Mahabharata war also. So, that has happened at that time, and that happened in this temple. There Shiva is worshipped in that form, Mallikarjunam, Mahalingam, Shivalingidam. It mentions that in these prayers. And that's where these prayers were written, addressing Lord Shiva about this. And it says there, that the so you have taken that dress of addressing Shiva, he says, you have taken the dress of that hunter, and you are looking for a good time to hunt for animals in the forest, because hunters are very happy when they see loads of animals, isn't it? You know, the hunters, if you observe carefully, you will see this. Even now it happens, people go for hunting. What they do, they first send the dogs and disturb the forest so that wild animals will start coming out. Deer and rabbits and so many other things will come out when they get disturbed. So these people who are gone for shooting, they enjoy that, to shoot these animals. So they are basically looking for animals. Otherwise, animals know that they are coming and they will hide away, isn't it? So the dogs are sent to disturb this, and they run out from there. And the person who is interested in shooting, he enjoys all these things. That's his enjoyment, whatever it may be. He enjoys all that thing. So similarly, Ajay Swami is saying to Shiva, you are now in this dress. You are a hunter. You want to hunt animals, isn't it? You like it when there are so many animals in the forest. But I will take you to a better place where there is plenty of animals there. There is plenty of animals there. And if you come, you will have enough work for a whole lifetime to do, he says to him. And where is that? There is that forest. That is my mind, he says.
That's my mind.
Please come in and start your hunting there. Because it's there, all the animals are living very peaceful, very comfortably there. That's where you need to hunt them. And he says here that that he mentions there that there is no boundary for this forest, what is inside. The other forest, what we are hunting now, it has got its own limits, isn't it? Boundaries will be there. But this mind inside, there is no boundary. I have one animal which is called the intelligence, which manifests in the form of anger all the time, in the form of anger. And the other and the other thing is, there is a lion inside which is my false ego, which is my false ego. And there is a fox inside which is my cheating propensity, always ready to cheat. And in addition to that, so many wolves wandering around full, which is my ignorance in different ways. And in middle of all that things, there is so many deer, which is full of so many hopes, wandering around trying to enjoy all that. All these are inside. So you've got the deer, you've got the lion, and you've got the wolves, you've got the fox, you've got the tiger, everything inside. Why do you want to go around in this forest when there is such a beautiful forest presented before you for you to enjoy? In Shivananda Lahiri, Acharya Swamiji says this to Lord Shiva. So please come inside. And nobody will ask you anything why you have come to this forest. Please get in, he says to him. So these are devotees' conversation with Krishna or Vishnu or Shiva, whomever they were in connection with when they wrote their prayers, they spoke like this. So so what will Krishna do there? Narada Maharshi says in the Bhagavadam these things. If you look into Bhagavadam, exactly the same thing. Bhagavadam, he says here that after Krishna, Narada Maharshi had the vision of Krishna in the forest, Sri Narada Maharshi started his journey, isn't it? Vedavyasa Maharshi asked Sri Narada Maharshi, what happens now? That do you still think see Krishna any time? Narada Maharshi says to him, in this kalpam, when I got this body, Narada Maharshi has to die before that, isn't it? And he went back to Brahma. And he was in Brahma's body. He was in Brahmalokam, in other words. In Bhagavatam, you can find it. When the next kalpam, next day of Lord Brahma, when creation started, Narada Maharshi jumped out of Brahma's lap. That is how it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. He jumped out because he couldn't wait. When the night of Lord Brahma happened, all the living entities goes to sleep. When the day happens, creation starts again, all living entities comes out from Brahma's body. So, Ulsangam Jagnire, it says like that in the Bhagavatam. Sri Narada Maharshi jumped out, he couldn't wait anymore. So, when he came out this time, he was given this veena, the musical instrument, and tamburu, whatever that is called, and playing that, I am wandering around all creation, singing about the glories of Krishna. So, when he said that, Vedavyasa Maharshi asked this question, Narada, if it is like that, that if you want to see any time Krishna, what do you do? Do you go to Golokam or do you go to Vaikuntham to see him? Narada Maharshi says, no. Ahu the darshan, it says that Ahu the Ivame Shikram Darshanam Yadiche Tasi. Then all I have to do is to play this veena and start the chanting the holy name. Ahudida Ivame Shikram, immediately Krishna appears. Darshanam Yadi Chetasi, he appears inside. And I can have the conversation with him at that time. So this is Narada Maharshi's realization. All devotees, all great devotees, they have spoken with Krishna in some time or the other. And their conversation is always to asking Krishna to come in, to enter inside and to purify inside. So there it says in that way. So now we will discuss the last, there's a lot more to talk about. We'll discuss that in the next Sunday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.